Уважаемые участники и гости форума будущего 2050, мы продолжаем нашу программу. Панельная дискуссия «Семья на
первом». Chief of Staff of the Presidential Commissioner for Children's Rights, Алексей Газарян.
Дорогие друзья,
dear friends,
всех приветствовать.
I'm glad to welcome everyone at that remarkable forum. When we have an opportunity not just to talk, but to altogether set some new horizons. Today we have a topic that would leave no one indifferent, that arouses a lot of disputes, and I'd like to invite to that stage, which looks so nicely with such
участников
нашей flowers,
нашего
the panelists,
нашего панельного
the participants in our panel discussion. First,
наверное, в нашей стране,
that's a person who is one of the few in Russia who is responsible for all the kids in Russia, and due to the new quarters favoring family, I'm glad to invite Presidential Commissioner for Children's Rights, Maria Львова-Белова.
Мария Алексеевна, пожалуйста.
Мария, most welcome.
Сегодня дискуссия, в которой будут участвовать люди разных профессий.
And that discussion would be contributed to by the people of different professions, different vocations, and to speak about the future of the family is not possible without people who are creating a space full of meanings, philosopher and public figure, director of Tsarigrad Institute, PhD in philosophy, doctor of political sciences, doctor of sociological sciences, Alexander Dugin.
Разговор о будущем
семьи. The talk about the future of family is not possible without understanding
как мыслит общество,
how the society thinks, what is the public expectations,
намерения в этом,
what are the intentions in the society, and will be helped in that. Даниил Ермолаев, Development Director of ЦИОМ Consulting.
Сегодня Константин Валерьевич уже говорил о том, что
Константин Малафеев already said that we have different types of sociology. One of those diverse sociologies is an applied ones that is not thinking in abstract terms, but discusses how to do that. Let me introduce to a member of the Public Council at the Presidential Commissioner for Children's Rights, Ms. Rusakova.
Мы сегодня говорим о будущем.
Today we speak about the future. We speak about technologies, about the society, their interconnection, their people, who attribute themselves to the cohorts of optimists, technological optimists, who celebrate the move of the AI, and with look with optimism as to where the AI drives us. So, Alexei Parfun, AI expert, vice president of the Russian Association of Advertising Agencies, and the father of many kids. And we are waiting for one more guest, and let me keep the suspense. Before I pass the floor to first speaker, in the line of our today's discussion, I thought that we were told that if you want to make the God laugh, tell him about your plans. And probably we're not speaking about the laughter that is actually related to some mockery, but rather this is a kind of a good laughter. Probably we can come up with something that the God would smile at and would say, oh, sounds great, let me help you with that. And probably we can have such a dream and we can imagine something and look into the future. Aspiring there to 2050, that even the heaven would like to help us. Just like seeing a drone, we would be just happy, and now it has become a driver of the mankind. It decides our destiny sometimes. Probably our followers will be able to create new tracks, new dialogue on development. Sometimes they say that the future casts a shadow. But is it so interesting to study shadows? We, the Russians, love light. I suggest all of you to turn on the drones, turn on the flashlights, to see where we are faring. Let us move to the big family, which takes the first place. But saying that, I would like to pass the floor to the mother and, at the same time, the Presidential Commissioner for Children's Rights, Maria Львова-Белова. Good afternoon, my dear friends, and I have such a strange feeling because in my position, usually, I have no time to dream, but I have even less chances to visualize something. Let me proceed from my practical experience. Let me just have a dream. Like Алексей Газарян has just said, I'm mother of 10, 5 are my own and 5 are adopted. I traveled across all the 89 regions of Russia. Now how our children are living, how our families are living in Russia. And certainly I have certain vision as how it may happen in 2050. I'm confident that 25 years from now, every child just like today, the family would enjoy a priority, but in future, my dear colleagues, it is important that childhood remains a childhood, a real one. That we have we live in a nice and safe environment, that we have toys, that we teach our daughters to be good mothers and our boys to be real defenders of the motherland, that we have certain cartoons that would be teaching the same thing, that everything around us is built the way that it is comfortable and convenient for our families. This is true for different spaces. We should have special rooms and corners for parents and children. That's about the safe crossings and friendly environment around the family with children. That's about having little urinals and little taps for children, because a lot starts with that, with those small details. Do you remember a cartoon that childhood should remain a childhood? And father says that it's very important that your childhood, you have to have a cat and a dog and a whole bunch of friends and merry-go-rounds, and the childhood of 2050 has to remain a childhood. But as the mother in that cartoon said, that it is important for the parents not to disappear. We have to keep the parental warmth and the parental resource. Across Russia, we try to open different spaces, such as the parents' clubs and the teenager centers, the day centers for the children with disability, so that the children could spend some time with you, that the specialist would spend time with them, and the parents would get that valuable time. Happy parents equal happy children. When me and my team were planning for our activity, after my appointment, we realized that it is very important to identify a special category of teenagers. When the childhood is over and the adolescence begins, when we have to get away from the infantile position to decision-making and assuming the responsibility, that's very important to develop the adolescent or the youth employment that in 2050. The work of the children should not be considered as something parochial.
Но согласитесь, коллеги, это первый заработок.
Well, this is about the first income, the first labor experience. This is about the choice of profession for the future that you do in an informative way. I started working as a professor in a musical school age of 16, and therefore I decided not to opt for the higher education. I got higher education a bit later, but then I finished the musical school, and I thought that it would be enough in order to gain more experience that would help me in my further higher education, starting at the university. We can look at our family dynasties. So it's important to develop them, because when the children repeat the experience of their grandfathers and parents, when we see the dynasties of engineers and teachers, that's very good and very important. I've just arrived from a contest, a presidential one, which is called This is in Our Family DNA. And a special attention has been paid to the family dynasties, traditions, culture. We have to make big families a fashionable thing. It emerges only now, but it is important that future on, it is widespread that we keep speaking about that, that this is not shameful to deliver kids and to have big families. I stand up for big families, that people create families as early as possible, immediately upon the graduation, that we don't have to make show a career growth, solve the problem of housing. This would come within age, with the years. And certainly, I do not claim to be the only right thing in that room. I remember clearly that, and I was born in a big family, and I have a big family myself, and remember that once the stockings that were peed would be lost, the parents would say that it was the daughter of Olga Belova, because that's a big family, and they all short of everything, including the dirty stockings. And those who lived in 1990s, they understand what I'm speaking about. But big families have to become inspirational. The big families have to become attractive. And let me divert from what the other speakers were saying. Not everything would be solved by financial support or any benefits. This is how I see my life in the future. This is about how I see my destination. And adolescents, the young years, have to give me a confidence that I will cope with that. So how big families with a lot of kids emerge, because children are delivered and the family has to maintain that family, to address their housing problems, etc., etc. We have to deliver kids now, and I'm looking at 2050. That would be when my younger daughter, now age of 7, would be 32 years old, and hopefully she would have a big family. We have to prepare our children for that 2050. The public survey showed that respect for the parents who are bringing up 3 kids and more was noticed more than 50-something percent, and 60-something percent citizens value very much big families. But at the same time, many people believe that for that, the big families will have to sacrifice their freedom and their time. I am mother of 10. I delivered some of kids myself. We adopted 5 more. I have a career, and I meet President of the Russian Federation and address big public tasks. It is important to deliver kids when you are young, under 30 years of age, and then you can take my word, you would come to the employer feeling that you are backed by someone and you have something in the background, not just a diploma, but you made a family, you delivered children. And for many employers, it would be an incentive to hire you, because it means that you have delivered enough kids and therefore you will not take a maternity leave. Look at the fathers. Fathers from big families, these are also quite valuable workforce, because they take care of their position and they think about how to get promoted, how to gain some heights, this way improving the well-being of their families. They're very much interested in that.
То, что касается преемственности.
As the succession is concerned, I believe that succession in big families is a norm. If a family managed to bring up children in an atmosphere of love and respect and who understand how their life goes on in big families, most likely these children would make their own big families. We looked at the research, and in essence, that survey does not reflect 100% my statement, but you know, what is interesting, the boys from big families would more often create big families, unlike girls, and girls do not create big families. Because once they grow up, they remember how hard it was for their parents to bring up children that they were not perceived very well in the polyclinics and in the transport, and they do not want to live in the same condition. But we need a positive image of a big family. In cartoons, in movies, on TV screens, we have to make sure that a big family is an honorary thing. And a big family starts from 3 kids nowadays, and really delivering the third child is very difficult. 2 kids, that's a norm, but the third child, that's a kind of a challenge. Do you remember that joke that once you have one child, you would wash everything and you would iron everything? So once you actually deliver the second child, you just wash everything, but you do not iron anything, and you make sure that the child does not eat from the plate of a cat. But once you deliver the third child, you just, if you see that the child eats from the cat's plate, this is a problem of the cat. That's a problem of a perception. And sometimes my grandmother would say, well, how comes we do not have enough resources in order to raise even one child? Mother and father, it's good when you have them, and you have to create safe and secure space for the child, that your child does not is not being beaten, no one is bullying him, and you hug the child when he needs that, and that's it. And you can trust my word. No mother with one child told me that she's a good mother. There is no differentiation between a good mother and bad mother. I used to have a friend of mine, mother of 8 children, and she was diagnosed with a cancer, and she approached me and she said, I'm not afraid of dying because I understand but that my kids, they have themselves. And I did my best. I delivered the children who later on would support each other. And even if something happens to me, that family would withstand that, would cope with that. And I thought that by 2050, it would be good to raise the bar even higher, to make a big family, not the one with 3 kids, but probably a family with 4, even 5 kids. Let's have a look. In terms of everyday life, for instance, we have a car, and that's a norm for a family with 3 kids. So father and mother and 3 kids taking their rear seats, and it's quite convenient to sit at one round table. Then going on vacation somewhere. So 3 rooms, that would be enough for you. But then once you deliver more kids, that would be a problem, that would be challenging. We cannot make sure that the big families would have 8 to 10 children. Even in 2050, we'll not achieve that. But I think that somehow we have already reached that bar that a big family would have 4 or 5 kids. And by 2050, we'll have to raise that bar even higher. As I said in the very beginning, some household things are not necessary. Do not matter, but it is good to have that. So this is about the housing. This is about having a house, a subsidizing mortgage, subsidizing certain utility payments, other payments, different benefits being paid out without bearing in mind the need. For instance, if a family delivered 5 kids and the same family with 5 kids that doesn't work and they get the same amount of benefits, it is important, certainly, that we do not make such a differentiation. I think that would be very good for a family to support them with different tax preferences or tax breaks. It may help the family budget. And a few words about the employment of a father and mother. We should not rule it out, the importance of that factor. And to conclude,
никто никогда в конце жизни не жалеет о том.
End of the life. No one is pity that they didn't earn money, that they didn't make a good career. But many regret that they did not make a family when they could do that or deliver more kids. Everyone regrets that. Those moral values have to become a norm for us. And as a presidential commissioner for children's rights, I may say that we were trying to prevent the orphanage. How we help the families in a dire situation, and once actually the children are taken to the orphanages once their parents are alive. We decided to proclaim a motto, family first. We have to live by the interests of our children, and they live by the interests of a family as a new value. This is a new view, and we have to nurture that. Then, step by step, our approach to perceiving the world would change. Thank you so much, Ms. Belova-Львова. And I see the outlines of that new big world. So big cars and little urinals, and a lot of meanings that answer the question, why we have to reproduce ourselves, why we have to deliver kids, why we have to make sure that the family is big.
Dear friends, just recently we were given a talk that had a historic value. Those of you who have not read the report that was the subject of that talk, that was prepared by the Tsarigrad experts, please read it. It's quite useful to take a position in front of time, to take a position in history, and it seems to me that what makes this time interesting is the fact that we are now talking through and recording and putting into words opinions, views, and aspirations that are based on and assumptions, text, and thesis. I'd like to give the floor now to the head of Tsarigrad, the partner, a benefactor, the individual who has a lot of social projects behind his back. You may not know about many of them, but they are serving to make our families stronger and our country stronger. Mr. Malafeev, the floor is yours. I would like to support my wife, Maria, in her last statement, that no one had complained or regretted having a child at the end of their lives. Many had regretted a lot of things at the end of their lives, but no one had normally regretted having a child and raising that child. I'm saying this from the height of my age of 50 plus. And I think that the measures that have been taken to support the family are important if we remember one intangible thing. That's love. Because family is the only place where a person gets born, gets raised, creating their own family, raising their family, and gives rise to their children, takes care of the elderly people, elderly parents, and that is all measured in love. Everything else is measured in monetary terms, but family is the only place where you are, feeding your child, raising your child. You don't sleep any nights, have sleepless nights, because you love that child. And the child follows your advice, not because you give them money, but because you love him and he or she loves you. And when you get older, and that child, having grown up, will help you take you to the doctor, not because he wants to count on getting an inheritance, but because they love you. Because family first means that love is number one value. If we don't put that into the number one spot, we'll always have money in the number one spot. And no matter how hard you try, you cannot resolve all issues with money in Norway.
SKR,
the total fertility rate is similar to that of Russia, and the same is in England. Their payment, their pay levels are higher. In Norway, it's almost like communism. They're great salaries, they get subsidies, they get apartments, but they don't give birth to children because they've lost that value of family. Norway was abandoned by all religiousness, all religious feelings, because in Christianity, the woman can become saved by giving birth to a child. And giving birth to a child is something that can save you. When Adam and Eve were thrown out of the paradise, and when Adam was told that he would earn his bread in the sweat of his brow, and that the wife would give birth to children in torment. And that's the purpose of women, as is the purpose of men, to work. And we have to have all measures of support, including pay, a payment to the woman, housing, subsidies, support for families. I've spoken about this during my presentation, and I'm sure Ms. Belova has spoken about this also, and those who spoke before me. But that alone will not help. You need to return love to that equation, because we need to realize that it is within our families that we are real. Through ourselves, we get raised within our families, and we want our children to have childhood filled with love. We want our parents to have time they can spend with their grown-up children. That's what I wanted to add to the things that you've already heard said about the material support things. You have to have love, and it's everywhere in love. Love is in films, in books, and love is within us. It's around us. Thank you. But how can we return and get back love? Mr. Dugin, please.
Thank you
very much. We didn't rehearse with Mr. Malafeev, but he ended where I wanted to take over. And there's not going to be a short lecture about Hegel, how he described family from the standpoint of the philosophy of the spirit, because that could become the philosophical content of our care for families. That's a program of a sort that is still relevant today. In fact, it has taken on some additional significance. So Hegel spoke about four qualities of families in the fourth volume of his works. And the first sense or meaning of the family, according to Hegel,
it's
quite interestingly formulated. Children are not the product of love. Children are love. That's their material incarnation. That is embodiment of love. What follows from that, Hegel says, look at how a father or mother looks at their child. It's not just one object that likes or subject likes the other. It's the embodiment of love. Children are love itself. And when we're talking about the mystery of love, about the fact that God is love, to the same extent that God is love, children are love. So God in that philosophical sense, that's a very deep idea, very profound idea. When a child is thrown up in the air, how the child is getting caught, and the parents are basically dancing around their child, even if they have a lot of children. They never become objects. They never get alienated. They never turn them into things. In society, people look at others as tools, as objects of their manipulation, but never in their families. And according to Hegel, the family is the beginnings of morality. The moral order doesn't begin with law, economics, or individual morality, but with family, according to Hegel. Family is the beginning of the moral order of things. That's a very deep idea. And the very first meaning, goal, or form of morality is to become a territory of love embodied in children. And for that to be embodied in children, it has to be in the family between the husband and the wife, between the older generation and the younger generation. That should be the territory of love, incarnate, not abstract. It should be immanent love. That's what family should be. The second goal of a family, according to Hegel, also quite interestingly, the second goal is quite important. It's the territory of speech. A family is where people talk, where people are taught to speak, and where incessantly, continuously, from the beginning the family got started, the conversation is ongoing, everyone with everyone. If there's less children, there's more polyphony. If there are more, there's more of it. But it should be a speech ensemble. So a family is a territory of speech, of language, of conversation. And how important it is to cultivate this with any family. It is important, therefore, to cultivate the language of the family. So depending upon what kind of speech patterns the child would hear as soon as the child gets born into this world. And according to Adolf Portner, the child gets into the hammock of words, into some space, some fabric that is comprised of speeches, even when the mother is still pregnant, or even before pregnancy. It is very important for parents to pay attention to what they are saying in the right language, using the right intonations, deeply rooted in Russian and so on. If you are doing something curtly and cursorily, that could impact the mentality. So family is a territory of the language. It's a privileged territory. That's why the mother or the father would be reading fairy tales to the children, and the intonations of the stories, the inflections, the prepositions and conjunctions, they subconsciously enter into the minds of people. So the family is a territory of speech, of language. The third definition of a family, but according to Hegel, family is the location where a collective heritage is produced. What is very important is what is created within the family is not created in order to be consumed right away. It is something that represents the connection between generations. The previous generation created something not just to consume, but also to pass on to the next generation. And that's why it is a very important function of caring for the other. This includes the future. In economics, in short-term economics, there's no need in family to speak about short-term, to create something that is to be immediately consumed. We are creating something that will be consumed by our grandchildren. So this has a very different ethical nature than just accumulation of wealth. Simple, of course, and very much in contrast with individual consumption. Common inheritance, a common heritage, is very much opposed to, the hedonistic culture of consumption. When you're accumulating your own heritage, you are taking care of that. You are making sure that what you accumulate is not just the quality of things, but also not just the quantity of things, but the quality. It has to be moral, and that would make it stronger. That's the third meaning of the family. And the fourth one, according to Hegel, is that the family is needed for man to become a man. That's where a human being is created. When a person gets born, it's not yet a human being, a fully fledged one. It's not enough to get born looking as a human. It is important to get born within a family and to get raised within the family. That's what makes an individual, a human being. That's what imbues us with all of the infinite richness, despite all of the differences between the genders and all that. All of the cultural elements are in the family. The family is an educator. Its calling is to make a human being a human being. These are the four definitions of a family, according to Hegel. And what's interesting, I would like to say this in conclusion, that Hegel doesn't stop there in describing the social family. He's saying that this can be compared with nature. And then he builds a history, or rather a theory of family cosmology. He said, time is father, space is mother, and what they give birth to is ether or the bodily world. So it the family has its own voice, has its own inheritance, it has its own education, and it has its own formation and the goal for the macrocosmic family. And it goes all the way to the state, because the state is what records all of the common and fundamental what we have in the world, in the nature. So the family is universal, and that's where I would like to stop my quick talk. Thank you very much. Dear friends, I don't know about you, but I just imagined this you know, universal hammock full of words and the heritage from the previous generation. It's interesting what Hegel thought about this. Mr. Dugin explained to us what he did think about this. But what is the new generation thinking about this? The younger people who are going to become mothers and fathers tomorrow, the day after tomorrow. It's one thing the way they act, it's quite another the way they think. And I would like to give the floor now to someone who knows this probably the best in the whole country, Daniel Ermolaev from Tsiom Consulting, Development Director. Dear friends, thank you very much. It's great to be at a place where you listen to the speakers and you agree with everything they say. I even thought that the image that I wanted to create at the very end is going to be the same that has already been described. I'm going to be talking about younger people, those aged between 18 and 24, and the way they view families, how they view creating a family, raising a family. This is based on a fresh study that was conducted in March of this year. It contained a large sample, included more than 180 young people, 80,000 young people. This data that we are going to show will confirm what has already been said. We'll start with the common things, general stuff. Younger people believe that the ideal world to get married is after 25. That's a comfortable wording for this, but if you drill down, you will see further. The ideal age for getting married and to have a child is between 28 and 30. And if we look at the dynamics of the last several years, let's say 5 to 7, that age threshold is going up. There are several reasons behind this, including those that are associated with internal goals and values. And this is not a reflection of you know, them being not mature enough. This is because they are hyper-responsible. When people realize that to give birth to a child is very important, it's a systemic action, and this is something that they can get afraid of. It doesn't mean that we need to start telling them right away that it is okay to, you know, give birth to children incessantly, but this is something that we need to keep in mind.
Переключится ли у меня слайд? Прекрасно. Относительно того,
regarding whether students, young students have children, only 5% said that they do have children, and 57% said that they do not intend то have children in the next 3 to 5 years.
С возрастом, при этом...
So there is a correlation there with age. But when we ask people about the traditional values that are mentioned by our president, we see that the value of a family is at the forefront. There is a discrepancy between what people declare and what people really feel, the way they act. On the left-hand side, you see the table, we see that 41% want to have two children. That's what Ms. Belova said. Two children is the overall norm that people look at as one. And when we talk to older people and ask them how many children they have, and it turns out that they have just one.
Once we understand that the norm would be about having three children, then probably they would deliver two. And if the norm is about four children, then the families would deliver three. There is one more thing. When you have delivered the first child and raised him, people are afraid that once they actually are delivering the second, and they would run into the same problems and challenges. So it echoes the problems with the career growth and other things that we mentioned before. At the same time, getting back to the topic of love, once we have touched upon that, 70% of students say that the main reason to marry a person, that's love, and that's the key one. 19% say that they want to deliver a child, that's why they marry, and there were different options. And certainly, we as experts at the level of assumption can bring those two factors together. So once you talk to a young man age of 18, 24, what a family is as an idea, as a principle, they would say, this is just about my grandfather, grandmother, father and mother, and me. So they do not speak about the children. So there is a kind of an idea that I share the family values, but they do not believe that this is your continuation. And only 3 to 8% under the impact of parents were under the impact of the benefits and external factors are ready to marry. So, and that's good. It is not like actually subsidies where benefits have been offered and everyone is eager to marry. Why people are reluctant to marry? They want to live for themselves, and this is a stereotype, because always these would be the girls who would speak about that. Young men would speak about the absence of a partner. We expect a different situation, but this is the reality. So the young man would say, we don't have a partner, that's why I'm reluctant to marry. And girls say, I don't want to marry because I want to live for myself, and this is my priority. My priority is the career. So children are not a barrier for self-fulfillment. Most likely, we can change that situation. It says that the financial and housing barriers are secondary. So that's true. It doesn't mean that they are not important. It doesn't mean that people do not bear that in mind. But in essence, they are secondary compared to availability of a partner and the love. On that slide, you may see more specifically why and for what reasons people would rule out of getting married. Housing actually is outpacing the ideal candidate by about 2%, and financial difficulties on 39%. So, and the no support from the family and no support from the state, these things are on the sidelines. That's a question that we asked, bear in mind that a young man or a young woman has a partner they want to marry. What measures of public support would have helped, would have facilitated the marriage? Financial support and help in addressing the housing problem, that's number two. Some material support such as a car, household appliances, etc., and special benefits. As a young father, I was lucky enough in order to do that. I just got a vacant place in a kindergarten in a week's time. But some young people say that it would be very difficult to find someone to stay with a kid if there are no vacant places in the kindergarten. And to conclude, so the financial support, help with the housing, and other things I've grouped on that one slide, but I would like to associate myself with the previous speakers. If we want to have more children, we have to have a big family. So once we make a focus on love and just reducing the hyper-responsibility, but without just sliding to irresponsibility, are important. And by 2050, actually, we have to have four generations within one setting: grandparents, parents, you, and your children, and then probably the children of your children. So that's the last slide. Thank you so much. I'm done with my presentation. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Много обнадеживающего.
A lot of inspirational things and quite optimistic things. You have said that there are intentions to create families, but how these dreams come true? And what you tell the sociologists once they do public opinion polls, how to bring that into life? And usually, young men are looking for partners, and they fail to find them, and probably Maya Rusakova may offer some solutions, what applied sociology tells us. Maya, the floor is yours. Let's put our hands together for Maya. I was in such a hurry that I nearly lost my boot. I like very much this idea to think about the future. But you know, when I got prepared for that meeting, I was asked why. You have to think about the future. Do we have to think about the future at all? I must say that there is a big kind of a sociological principle, whether we are thinking about what may happen next. We are using stress methodology once we ask a question. What you would like to see in what you would like to be said about you once you are dead? What you would like to be written in the eulogy? It is not habitual for our nation to think about the death, and if my life is over, what you would leave once you pass away? How would you remember? How would you be remembered? And therefore, the vision of the future is very important. Would like to leave for the next generations? Do we want to build a new city, a new house, a new country? Do we want to make a family, open a new business, invent a medicine? This is about creativity, about creating something new. If we look at what the previous speakers were speaking about, if we focus on consumption, if we say about what we want to get, for instance, want to get education, and education is a service. For instance, if you want to buy a country house, a car, an apartment, the list could be continued. Some want to achieve self-fulfillment, but it depends on what self-fulfillment means. Such a big vector is clearly very important, and in essence, in sociology, we try to grasp that reality, and our surveys on teenagers and young people, for instance, echo the same principles as there are in the projects that we implemented along with the Presidential Commission for Children's Rights Office. It might be perceived as just opposition to create and to consume. But if we speak about the family of the future, I'm an optimist, not a techno-optimist, but just an optimist. That's why I see future very positively. Many sociologists, followed by journalists and the society in general, speak about the future as a threat and something alarming, something scary, something related to panicking, alarming society that the future will bring some challenges and threats that we'll have to address. Such an anxiety that we have look into the future results and the fact that it makes it very difficult for us to speak about the future and to focus on the present day. But if we look at the image of the future, for instance, I try to Imagine that proceeding from the results of our poll, in essence, the value of the family would grow, and the efforts that are taken nowadays, I think that the people who are sitting on that stage, these are the people who do a lot in order to change the attitude towards the family. The very concept of saving the families that was introduced by Ms. Belova Львова helps us to look at the role of a family from a different angle. And if we continue what Mr. Malafeev said, that love should underlie everything, that love is the basement for everything, we say that people are looking for love, they want to love and to be loved, and therefore the value of a family would grow. Besides that, the family of your future, most likely, unless our housing policy does not change, it would be actually quite a utility one. So it would be a family living in its own shelter. And nowadays, when the families are having small apartments like studios, would not result in the fact that several families would live all together, several generations of their families would live together. But we can change that as well. There is another quite important thing regarding young ladies. Young ladies, young women have a demand for having a man, a breadwinner, not only just bringing the income to the family, but also contributing to the family matters. So my husband has to really contribute to bring up children, not just bringing in money. So in future, I see that the husbands would take a parental leave and would assume some of the duties within the family. And certainly it will help to harmonize the family of the future. There is one more thing. Satellite technologies would enter our lives, and we have smart houses, for instance, already now. When doing survey via a phone, we run into the situation that robots are questioning robots. Very soon, probably they would tell robots from the people. But on the other hand, the technology bring a lot of good, and the next speaker would say more about that, but I do think that in future families would use technologies more often. Another demand that we see in young people, that's about having flexible working hours, working from home in order to spend more time with the family members. And another objective is to create other opportunities to share time with others. We have to teach our children to work together, to act together, to spend time together. Another thing, we have some domestic migration, for instance. In my university, more than 80% of students are the ones from other regions. We see migration when we receive representatives of other nationalities as well. In future, we'll see the mixed marriages with the representatives of other nationalities, and it would impact the rights and traditions in future, something to bear in mind when we develop certain programs. And the increase in the lifespan, which has been predicted, the improvement in the healthcare and new technologies, would result in the fact that people would live longer. How the younger generation would treat the elderly, how the relations are being built in that new family of the new generation. All in all, I think that the value of the family would improve, would increase, but it depends on us, the ones who are creating those values. Thank you so much, Ms. Rusakova. That's a surprising forum. Very naturally, we see the newly born kids, newborns who are grasping all those values. but along with the newborns, we are listened to by robots. When the robots are going to make families, have we already approached that moment, and what would happen once the robots announce their own demographic policy? Will we be able to address that somehow, to anticipate it? Mr. Parfen, over to you.
Добрый день, друзья. Спасибо.
Good afternoon, my dear friends, and thank you so much for your invitation. That's a privilege, and so I'm humbled to speak in front of you. And well, these are two of my favorite topics, family and AI. There's nothing else that I can think of.
Так, я вот это пролистнул.
I will skip that slide. Let me start with my first study, which is quite obvious. I was introduced as a techno-optimist, but I will introduce a grain of pessimism, but also will tip on what to do about that. The world is changing. Let me start with that statement. Technologies are changing our life and all the aspects, and I agree very much with what's been said today. And certainly, I loved what was said about love. This is the most important thing that differs us from the AI and technologies. This is our most important feature. But the world is changing. And I introduced a video I shot my sons that illustrate the future in which our children and grandchildren would live. And let me show that video over to you. Probably my guys would not be offended. It would be a very brief video, but listen to what they say in the very beginning. Can you increase the sound, the volume? I don't have a phone. What do you have? I don't have it either. I have just a little camera. And I forgot what it is. I don't have a phone either. Are you dreaming of buying a new one? Well, they are complaining to Alisa that they don't have phones, and then discuss with Alice that the father does have a phone, and the mother does have a phone, and Alice, this is their interlocutor, and that would require a lot of responsibility from Yandex company, because Alice is telling fairy tales to our children, and Alice, as the voice aid, would stay with us for a while. I cannot imagine how fast the technologies would change. So we used to have cell phones, now there are smartphones, and Elon Musk's father is with us today at that forum, and Elon Musk is developing chips to be implanted in people's heads, and this is something that our children would live with by 2050. It's very important to speak about the future, because this is the self-implementing prophecy. What we're saying now probably would come true. I once got familiar with an article from Forbes magazine that said that about 80% of the Z generation are prepared to marry an artificial intelligence. Natural intelligence has much more benefits. Probably guys are not familiar with that, but trust me, natural intelligence has more benefits. So I'm a little bit anxious, and let me step aside from my technological optimism. But I don't know how to address that. Natural intelligence, apart from love, has a number of other advantages. And AI certainly is scalable and offers more opportunities for the mankind. And we have a presidential program on developing AI, but at the same time, I found those three benefits, which are insurmountable. We, the human beings, we can come up with an idea. And I actually show that picture that's a picture on the ceiling of the Sixtine Chapel. Secondly, we act a premeditated way, so we know what we want, what we are doing. Artificial intelligence can be very efficient in the short run, but cannot be efficient in the long run. Once, actually, strategy is about stockpiling the problems and objectives. A man can do that, but the AI cannot do that.
That's a huge advantage. Because we know that there is no artificial intelligence, there is just machine learning. What makes us different is the level of responsibility to understand what we're doing, why we're doing this, what our responsibility to the future generations is. And that really worries me. Whatever I do with regard to AI in my projects, I always think about how this will impact the future. Because this is the future of my children. And they do matter to me in a huge way. But reality is somewhere here. The key to success is in the balance or the equilibrium of technologies and our natural wisdom and responsibility. And that's huge synergy. It carries a lot of good things, a lot of useful things. Well, I decided to use these words, the supernova or super new ethics. I should have probably taken them out given the lineup of the speakers, but I decided to leave them here. We need to think about what is the nature of man and what our goals is, what is our purpose on this planet, what we are to do here, how we are supposed to show ourselves, and what we're supposed to be concerned with. I think AI and this whole era of technological development has made people talk about certain things that we had not thought about. Think about this following. AI draws pictures, makes films, writes music, composes music, and does it better with every moment. What is a man's role here? What is the man's place here? When children and love are two excellent answers to this question. I also a good eater, and that's another option that I should probably have. So technologies are not going to be able to replace people. They will only replace those who fail to learn to use new technologies. We just need to learn how to do this. We all understand what we need to do. We are going to make love, and we'll go into the digital future. Dear friends, after the forum, we will make love. And I would like to thank you heartily. And in the context of our readiness for AI, I would like to ask one more question. If it would be possible to have a marriage where there would be a man, a woman, and AI? This is the question I would ask Ftsiom to poll people about. And I would like to thank you all. The speakers have presented the entire palette of ideas, from machines to meanings, philosophic issues, and specific matters related to square meters per person. But the discussion wouldn't be a discussion if we wouldn't given you an opportunity. And we have an opportunity to take one question from the audience. And I see there's a raised hand. Please send the microphone over there. And if you want to ask it to a specific individual, please indicate who it is the question for.
It's a whole ceremony.
That's a whole ceremony. Hello. My name is Svetoslav. I'm happy to welcome you all at this forum. We support you. I'm glad that this forum touches upon such important issues as demographic issues, migration, and of course, our future and the well-being in this world. I'd like to ask a question that would be probably to all speakers. In your opinion, how should I put it? Maybe a question for Mr. Dugin. You will understand. It's about the philosophy of love. What is the philosophy of love, and how can we ensure that people would concentrate on love in the future? Mr. Dugin, you are the top expert on this topic. It's a provocative question in a way. It all depends on this. There's this order, an ancient knight's order, the order of the Garter. And has this slogan, may the ones who think badly about this feel ashamed. we interpret things in certain ways. If we're talking about just the carnal love, I mean, it's one thing to make love in that sense, but love is God. If we switch the register, if we, you know, talk about the style of our discourse, we would understand that love is our, is God, and that's our calling. And that's a very different orientation. Plato in Feast has several explanations for the sources of love. They are all wonderful. And then he says, and now he says, what really is the source of love? And Plato says that love is that godly creature that is between the heaven and earth, between the plenty and you know, poverty. That's what separates and brings us together. So we are establishing this vertical in the world. That's what the philosophy of love is. Thank you very much for your question. And one more.
Hello.
Мы на связи.
Да. Yes, we can hear you. Михаил Кошмаров.
Вопрос.
The question. Yes, we forgot about one important thing, an obvious thing.
Установка на пять детей в семье.
So Mr. Malafeev was saying that we need to, you know, shoot to have five children. Sociology. There are no portraits. We need to set up a contest. Involve young people under 25. With a high IQ, with an ideal health, who want to create a family of five plus children and who would be getting a compensation for this from foundations, would need to pass a test and then create a pool, a reserve, family reserve for reproducing healthy and smart children. This is what Lee Kuan Yew said. Let's pay women with higher education an extra payment for them to give birth to smart children. We need a contest. And that's not all. We know how all contests are conducted. Okay, let's have 10 commissioners manually select the winners, looking at all of their parameters, including the health parameters, selecting people that would make up this pool of candidates. We have an early answer. My friend, Alexei Tratsuk, who spoke about cinema in the next door room, recently came up with this script. In the near future, after failing to overcome the demographic crisis, those who are 25, who hadn't married yet, AI, would find a mandatory couple. Because we all know everything about these individuals. If you didn't get married until 25, you will get a husband or a wife. And then you have to spend a year trying to prove that you are not, you know, a good couple, and that's a good idea for a TV series. So people are now thinking about this a mandatory marriage. And I wanted to ask you this question. My name is Vladislav. I wanted to ask you about a true love. I haven't heard a single word about this, and I think it is this true love that gives rise to a good family and many children. That's what makes a man happy. And whenever the man knocks on the door gets opened, the world becomes quiet and happy, regardless of what had happened during that day. That's what we need to talk about. And this love is given to us or gifted to us by God. And in the context of AI, is there an ability? Is this about how you make the model? Whether the AI system can tell whether these individuals are a good couple, whether love is possible between them? A good question. And one more question. And the very last one. I will try to answer this quickly. I think it's the it's something that cannot be calculated by an algorithm. Can I ask a question? Yes, please. I wanted to say that many things in our lives can be calculated using algorithms, almost anything. But I have a feeling that when you can explain what love is, that's no longer love. That's the feeling that I had always had. I doubt whether algorithms are going to win here and can explain this to us. Dear friends, at this optimistic note, I think we should complete this discussion and move on to action. Build a world where the family will be at the number one place. Thank you very much for this audience, for this attention of yours, and for this session. As an organizer of all these 2 days, I would like to make an announcement that we need to really take pity on Mr. Musk, the elder. He's been here for 9 hours.